Hello, welcome to... Hello, welcome to Bagel... Sorry I keep interrupting you, Chris. Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network. It deals with Macintosh, and it's the week for Macintosh. It's Macworld, iWorld. We tried to get Paul Kent on, but he's just too damn busy. He's doing interviews from 6:30 this morning, so... Not bad at all. And he was probably out drinking with the rest of the crew that are here and out there at the moment. Starting with, top left, the bleary-eyed Don McAllister. Bright and early, mate. Very impressed with your effort. Thank you.
Yeah, that's no problem. No problem. It's nice and early here. Well, it was 7:30 when we started, but it's now 5 to 8.
Yeah, it's 12:15.
Yeah, no, but it's all right. It's all right. Well, that's the usual thing, you know, you sort of wake up about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and... try to get back to sleep again, have another couple of hours, and then you sort of wide awake by about 6.
Oh, hi. Who's got the feedback?
That's me, hang on. Sorry.
There we go.
Sorted. next to him is the man who's had better days, Andy Lee. Hello, mate. Hi, sorry, pal. How's things?
Yeah, good.
I don't know. Why am I asking that? Tough start to the day for you, mate.
A little bit, yeah.
All now, thanks. Though. Here to talk, Mac, with the rest of us.
It's the weekend, so...
Good man. Get it on. Beneath him, lying in bed. In bed with Chris Forsman. How you doing, mate?
Super fantastic.
Tough start to the day.
Who made me get up this early?
Oh, man.
I could have slept in a half an hour.
Yeah, you could. I'm sorry, mate. Next to him, still having trouble signing in the chat room, Gazmaz, how you doing, mate?
Doing very well, thank you. Actually, I've got in via colloquy at last, me being a Mac man, you know.
Yeah, Safari's got a real problem.
I've got two games to ref this weekend, so back on song.
Jolly good, excellent. Two games?
Yeah, Saturday, one Sunday.
Oh, that's okay. I thought you could like one after the other.
No, I'll do that. It's same time. I did that.
Colts in the morning, and that was the days. Colts in the morning and Sears in the afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then,
in the middle of you.
Last but by no means least, Mr. Alex G. Fox.
No, definitely least.
Least. Alex G. Fox in the middle.
There you go.
Just straight right. Fresh from the photo show.
Yeah.
The Week in Apple. It's Macworld, iWorld. Straight away then, Don and Chris, did you have a look around yesterday? Did you see anything worthwhile? Was there anything that grabbed your fancy? And anyone that was watching the feeds, what did you think of the stuff that was on offer? Don?
Yeah, managed to do just a very quick recce around the exhibition hall, but most of the day I did spend in the various sessions and watching some of the events going on live, sort of both in the exhibit hall and also, you know, just around the venue. It's got a completely different vibe to it this year. There's a lot more going on, and there seems to be, I don't know, there seems to be about the same amount of people. But one thing I did notice was that the tech talks, you know, the actual sessions that they run, were really well attended this year. I think that the change in pricing that they've done, you know, you can buy this iFan ticket, which is a lot cheaper than it used to be, has brought more people in, not just to look at the exhibit hall, but also to listen to the tech talks, which is really good. I mean, all the sessions I was in yesterday, they were pretty much standing room only. So that was a big difference to what it normally is. Now, normally, they're fairly well attended, but because there are so many that spread out this year, they seem, you know, lots more people actually going into the sessions, which I thought was really encouraging. But the exhibit hall, usual fare, some big stores there, some small vendors, lots of little different gadgets and stuff. But I'm going to sort of hit it hard today and have a good look around today, really.
Cool. Chris, any first impressions?
Yeah, I actually had a bum try to grab my fancy, but I had him arrested.
You had what? You had someone trying to grab your bum?
My fancy. A bum tried to grab my fancy.
What's your fancy?
I don't know. You're British.
You've lost me, mate. I have no clue what a fancy is. If you're talking about your arse, then fair enough, but...
Okay. We'll say that, sure.
You say fanny. Completely different word in the UK.
Show floor is oddly... almost exactly as I remember from last year.
What? Just no different.
Just the same booths and the same locations. It was a little strange. I was like, wait a minute, didn't I? No, I definitely wasn't here. Well, yeah, I was. I was here a year ago, and there's the same booth in the same place. So there's a good, a really good mix of vendors. I think on the show floor, it's so, I mean, it's just different than I remember from a couple of years ago, even 2009 when Apple was here for the last time. It's just a different feeling, and I think that the vendors are like connecting to the consumers like on a very personal level that it's so opposite of what you see at CES. I mean, it's just, you know, the booths at CES are they're definitely bigger, they're crazier, and the people there are just sort of like waiting for people to come to them. And here, you know, the people at the booths are like, hey, come on over, let's talk about this new thing or that new thing.
Is that a reduction in the number of people who there are to talk to, or is it just a change in vibe?
No, I couldn't say for 100% certain, but I feel like it's the same number of booths that were here last year. And the foot traffic seems as good or better than last year. So mm-hmm. I don't think it's the different. I think it's just a different vibe altogether than what you see at something like CES or even that you would see at Macworld 3-4 years ago.
Can anyone correct me here? Because I've got to say, I haven't seen one official word from Mac that even recognizes that this week is happening at Macworld.
From Apple, you mean?
Yeah. They've not even acknowledged it. There's no,
they never do.
There's no word, no nothing.
No.
There was a lot of excitement this morning, wasn't there? Because I think overnight the Apple store went down.
Yeah.
But it was all for nothing, really. Just maintenance, I think.
Yeah, but they do tend to announce something around about the time. I mean, we had Aperture came out 1 year, Aperture 3, and I think the iBook thing could have been, you know, that was timed like a week or two before Macworld. So there's always something around Macworld that we can talk about. But of course, it's completely different to when Apple used to make their major announcements. You know, still missing slightly the lack of the keynote first thing at Macworld. But it's a different show now. You know, they don't really need that anymore. It's more of a community show. And I think this year especially, that's what Paul and the people at IDG have tried to promote, yeah, that it's a community event and, you know, not just Apple hardware, but what people actually do with the Mac and, you know, all the different creative stuff you can do with the Mac and lots of examples of people coming in using Macs for various things. Like there was, you know, sessions on music yesterday afternoon, drum software and, you know, bands coming in playing. And it's a really nice chill out sort of event.
Did you see Mo play?
No, I didn't, but they were in for a big interview as well, weren't they, with, I can't remember who did it now, I think Chris did it, but the other Chris Breen, I think Chris did a big interview, yeah, with them, mm-hmm, on stage. But yeah, I missed them, unfortunately. No, I think I was involved in a session at the same time. There's lots going on in parallel as well, which is quite difficult to get your head around. You really need to be very selective about what you go and see at any one particular time if you are interested in the tech talks. So yeah, I sort of missed that one yesterday afternoon.
Didn't Paul Kent say that there's, was it the number around 150 new releases from companies that were going to be there, which he was, I think, quite pleased with. I don't know whether that's good or bad, really.
I'm trying to remember. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I've seen here, I saw at CES. Mm-hmm. And so what exactly is new, I couldn't say. And there's a lot of companies talking about, like, apps and software, mm-hmm, not very little about hardware.
Yeah, I think the way they've arranged it now, they've got it so that smaller vendors have got a chance to actually exhibit and come in. You know, so they've restructured the pricing of the exhibits. So you know, you do get very small manufacturers, small software vendors, even people who are just iOS developers, etc. Just want a small booth that they can stand by and you know, explain what their app does. You can do that as well. So there is an awful lot of small vendors that have got the ability now to get in front of all these Mac people and show them their wares.
I mean, you can't really blame anyone for wanting to be at CES because it's a bigger show, no, it's a bigger, more attractions, more sell, you know, more press coverage, that kind of thing. So now that Apple's gone, particularly from Macworld, but it does naturally take it down a peg or two, I presume. So it's nice to see that there's a vibe, though, from what you said, though, Don, which is a good thing. You know, an enjoyment is still there.
Yeah.
It's going to continue.
Well, you and I would assume that the smaller guys would actually prefer to be at Macworld iWorld because they'll probably get bigger coverage, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're saying...
CES, Yeah, CES is like a showcase, isn't it? It's sort of for the big boys to actually show what they're doing. I mean, although lots of products are announced, more often than not, they're not actual products. They're plans for future products and, you know, what's coming down the pipeline. Whereas here at Macworld, it's very much, you know, stuff you can buy here and now. And, you know, it's tangible stuff. You can actually go to the show floor. And more often than not, you can actually buy this stuff at the booth itself. There's a nice stand by the guys who do the, I can't remember what they're called now, but they do those long life batteries and stuff. They've got quite a big booth and they've got some really nice stuff for having these external batteries for your Mac as well as for your iPhone and your iPad. And you can go in, you can get special show rates and buy stuff at a discount. Really good.
You about social, yeah, Chris?
I was going to say Seagate has, you know, they have these little GoFlex drives where you can snap on a little adapter on the back and like make it USB, or you snap on a little adapter, makes it FireWire. And they have a new Thunderbolt adapter out. And it's actually, I think, not shipping for like a week or two, but they have some here on the show floor and they're selling them to people. So it's like, if you want to get a Thunderbolt, you know, like the only single drive Thunderbolt solution available, you can only get it here at Macworld. So it's pretty nice. I sort of feel like it's a little bit less of a show for people like myself as journalists, and just so much more like Don was saying, it's just so community oriented. Like if you're in the Mac community at all, definitely want to be here.
That's nice. It's really nice. I've got to say, you know, if we had a couple of $1,000 to get to CES or Macworld, I wouldn't be going to CES to try and do podcasts and stuff like that. I'd rather do it from Macworld. You know, you get the exposure. Mm. Paul's already offered us the opportunity to be on stage for all of the shows that we could have done today. And I've said, you know, I'm sorry, but we're not going to be coming this year. But I really, really hope we can be there next year and do everything live from the show floor or live from the stage, because it would be really cool. Really, really cool. We'll push all the shows back so the show will actually be open rather than sitting and watch. We'll all be in bed together in the hotel room doing it.
I think Don's been in bed with Callie Lewis, haven't you, Don?
Not this time round. No.
But you've done that twice, haven't you?
No, just the once.
Was it just the once? I thought you'd done it twice. Repeat performance. No.
Once that you can talk about.
Dude, it's once more than me. It's once more than 57 billion people. I mean,
there we go. Should really perhaps explain that to people if they don't. It was an interview.
No,
leave it there, Don. Leave
no,
it there.
No, trust me, that doesn't need clarification, mate. Just
you're,
leave it hanging out there.
Man who just went through the roof, okay, mate. Just keep it there.
Yeah, your cred's up. Leave it alone. I mean, guys, sitting here back here in the UK, is there anything that's kind of from the Engadget coverage and that kind of stuff that's leapt out yet? Is there anything that's not shocking, but you know, something that's caught the saliva glands and got them going?
No.
No, right, okay.
I think the silence says it all, doesn't it?
Oh, come on. I mean, what about the MyBook? Because, I mean, that I don't recall being shown that at CES. I think this is a Macworld iWorld thing.
No, I think I saw that previously.
I heard rumours of it, but I haven't. Was it in the flesh?
Well, perhaps it was rumours that I saw, but I'm sure I've seen pictures and a video of it previously. But perhaps they've left the official release until
the Thunderbolt MyBook?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had some at CES. They didn't have a booth or anything, but they physically had some, and I got to see some at CES.
I mean, these things look nice. They're very aluminiumized, so they're kind of like the Mac as appearance for Mac Pro. And the speeds that they were talking about were phenomenal, weren't they?
Well, I think to be fair, I think they were like they had four drives hooked together, and were streaming all data from all four.
Yeah, they were strapped configuration. So yeah.
But I mean, they were talking 530 megabits a second, 690 megabits a second on read and write.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Pretty impressive. And if you're saying they're daisy chaining them as well,
yeah,
even more impressive.
I saw somebody talking to somebody at Macworld who was doing some video editing from a Thunderbolt drive. And they said it was running quite smoothly. So, I mean, this is what a lot of people, I think, were waiting for, weren't they? Lots of Thunderbolt announcements.
Mm.
I think they're going to trickle out during the year rather than flood.
I mean, Darren in the chat room saying the Western Digital Thunderbolt discs are the only thing that I've seen of any interest so far from the show. I mean, is that a fair comment, or is there a lot more that people will be seeing over the next couple of days?
I haven't finished my report yet, obviously.
Well, you're lying in bed. I would hope not. Yeah, I had a wander around. I went out and got drunk, and then I wrote a report and stayed in bed till 8:30.
He hasn't got up yet. What are you talking about?
I did a video thing with some guys from the UK. It doesn't sound good. I mean, it's...
Anyway, there's a couple guys here that they've developed a little docking station for the MacBook Air. That's really clever.
Is that the Kickstarter thing?
Yeah. They did a Kickstarter project. It got funded, and they said they're now shipping out the first round of Kickstarter. You know, the people who invested via Kickstarter, they're going to get their little dock the next couple of weeks, and then after that, they'll be generally available. But it's actually really, like, really clever little idea. It's like a little, trying to see if I can describe, but it's like a thin strip almost. This little plastic stand, and you set your MacBook Air into that, and then from both sides, there's two little modules that just snap into the ports, and you know, then you give you all these extra USB ports. It gives you a mini display port, gives you an Ethernet port. It has a little thing that fits your MagSafe power adapter. Fits into it, so when you snap it together, the power is already connected. So you can, and then it has a little lever. You just move the lever, the ports come undone, and you pull the MacBook Air out, and you're ready to go.
Right. Is this the landing zone? Is that the one?
That's the one. Yeah.
That's it.
Do they actually do? Is it? I've seen something like that for MacBook Pros. Is that Henge docks? Something like that.
Yeah, Henge is here as well, but that's more. You stand your MacBook on edge into the Henge stand, don't you? Yeah, this is sort of like a flat unit that just sits on your desk, and you just lay your MacBook on top and then close the side panels.
Right. It's very really compact. Nice. Yeah.
I'm desperately trying to find a picture here, and I found one, but it's been put up in HTML5 or Flash or something, and I can't actually screen grab it. Just to get, where are we going? And now it's put it into the folder, and I can't find the bloody picture in the folder. Then the Verge aren't helpful, are they? No.
You need Skitch.
There we go.
No, you need Snagit.
Snagit.
Little snapper.
No, I've got it. It's not a problem, but it's just getting it out into. There we go. Is that the thing that we're talking about here?
That's the one.
That's the one. Mm-hmm. What was the price on that? Any?
$199.
That's a lot for a dock, don't you think?
Yes.
Well, you start off with a MacBook Air and you end up with something the size of a MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I think I pre-ordered one for about $159, I think, or even less. It might have been cheaper. So I'm waiting for mine to arrive.
You parted with $159 that you haven't for something you haven't even seen.
Well, it was Kickstarter, wasn't it?
I love you, Don. You're so...
Don, ever the optimist.
How Kickstarter works.
Yeah, well, I've seen it in real life.
It's usually $20 or something, isn't it? It's not...
Problem is, it only fits a 13-inch one, Don.
No, it fits 11 as well.
You'd spoiled my joke.
The only difference, in fact, the only downside is that the mini DisplayPort isn't Thunderbolt enabled at this round.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because they haven't got the they're speaking with Intel to try and get that sorted, but it will be at the next release that will have Thunderbolt support, which is a bit disappointing.
So what you're saying is they're going to take another $199 off you in 3 months?
Probably, yeah. But I'll stick this on eBay.
Probably, but I'll stick this through the books.
Well, I really want. I mean, it's an ideal solution for the MacBook Air because it is a bit of a pain at the minute having all these cables sort of strungle over the desk. And I think it's a much neater, elegant solution just to have that port, you know, just laid on your desk with all your wires hanging out the back.
Well, and the first announced Thunderbolt solution, the Belkin Hub, isn't going to be here till September at the earliest.
A lot of the stuff.
And it's like $300.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. There's a lot of money and there's a lot of waiting around. I mean, there's a lot of stuff from CES that was talking about, and not just Thunderbolt, there was a ton of stuff at CES that was just talking about coming in September, October, November. And you're kind of like, well, okay, I get this is the last chance you're going to get to show it before September, October, November, because you're not going to wait until January next year. But you kind of expect stuff that's shown to show up sort of 2-3 months maybe.
Yeah.
Is there a problem with the Thunderbolt licensing? Are they asking too much? Because of the uptake has been so slow. It's almost as if the manufacturers are saying, yeah, it's a nice idea, but for what it's going to cost us to do it, it's not worth the while?
No, there's, I think there's a variety of issues that manufacturers are having. The one is that demand for Thunderbolt licenses is apparently like higher than Intel can handle right now. You know, like the docking station people were telling me that they applied 4 months ago to get into the Thunderbolt program, and they haven't even heard one single response from Intel yet.
Really? Like,
not even. Yeah.
That's crazy.
We want to sell your product. Yeah. We want to ingratiate ourselves to your technology, and you can't reply to our emails.
And I think the issue for Intel is they're holding off on the second generation controllers that A are going to be smaller and B cheaper, and they supposedly haven't like officially announced an official like licensing program. It's just been on a company by company basis so far.
But the manufacturer's not holding back and sitting thinking, well, you know, this was originally going to be optical. They've released it in copper, probably rushed it out in copper. So if we just hang around, they're going to come out with something that's optical again.
No.
No, I think the optical's way off. I told you.
Way out.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of the manufacturers I talked to, the issue is these controllers, like integrating these controllers is not... Like, it's not just like slap some traces on a board, put the chip in. It's,
yeah.
You know, it takes some engineering work to get, you know, to get everything working. And, you know, the data just, it just transfers so fast that there's design issues that they, you know, just haven't run into in the past with the standards that are current, you know, like FireWire and USB and stuff. They just haven't run into those issues before.
Fair enough. Right, my, go on, sorry, Gaz.
No, it wasn't me.
Oh, it wasn't you. Right, okay, sorry, pal. My story earlier in the week, we got a leak from someone that there was going to be a 7-inch iReader of some description hitting in June after after WWDC. And I sent the stuff out to you guys and said, what do you think? And Don and Chris, you've both come back and said no. I've spoken to someone else and they said no as well as. So I don't shoot the messenger here because this was just something that I got as a tip off from somebody. But, I mean, is there no plausibility to this at all? Is there no desire for this to be correct or be anywhere near true?
Here's the part about it that I think is very likely that Apple is going to try to put together a cheaper iPad. I don't think there's any question that some part of this strategy is going to involve a cheaper iPad. I have a very hard time believing that it's going to be a 7-inch.
So it's the form factor that's the thing that's really pulling you away from this.
Yeah, because and especially having used iBooks Author, but just knowing how people develop iPad apps, it's very specific how you arrange, you know, user interface elements, what size they have to be, you know, how close together they can be. And this is echoed in iBooks Author, like when you lay out text on the screen, and it's very specific to the size of the iPad screen. Those, you know, the multimedia widgets and everything are designed with the iPad user in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to a couple of devs when this kind of came in before I sent anything out, and one of the major comments from the devs was, I'm a bit concerned about the ratio of pixels and the legacy issue of existing iPad applications that will then transfer between the two. Right. So, I mean, that's a really valid concern, but they're talking about this being a Retina display, which at 7-inch, I mean, it's a whole new form factor for Apple, as you say, but then at Retina, does that then... I was trying to sit and work out in my own mind the kind of ratio split between going down, if you went down at the same ratio, whether you'd end up going 16:9, and if you went 16:9,
no,
whether that would look, you know, that would be just too horrific.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And the thing that rang alarm bells with me with the stuff you sent over was that it would be a cut-down version of iOS. And as soon as I heard that, I thought, nah, there's no way they would do that. You know, they're not going to release two versions of iOS or remove any of the features from iOS because that's just not their way, I don't think. You know, they need to keep it simple. They need to keep it standard. And they don't really want to confuse the issue by having multiple versions of the same operating system for different devices. So that immediately just sort of killed it dead for me.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you look at what they did with the Touch and the Apple TV, it's the same OS throughout everything. So if they didn't do it for either of those, they're not going to do it for a new device.
So Chris, do you think you mentioned that they're looking to have a cheaper iPad, presumably for the school market, from the iBooks process that the presentation they did last Monday? Was it last Monday? Can't remember now. Or was it a week ago? Whenever it was. Do you think that if they are actually looking at trying to reduce costs so they can perhaps put some of these, the iPads into schools more reasonably, that this is where these other rumours appear from? Obviously, somebody says cheaper, so everybody thinks smaller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I think like I want to say likely. I'm not sure that's exactly the right word, but I feel like the most likely track is Apple's going to simply keep offering the iPad 2 or some combination of, like just the basic Wi-Fi version of the iPad 2. And they might even only offer it education only for a special price. But I feel like they're just going to, the iPad 3 is going to have some better hardware in it.
Do they do a special price for the old white MacBook for schools for education? Because for me, the iPad, it's replaced the MacBook. It's not the MacBook Air's not replaced the old white MacBook. I think that the iPad's almost replaced the old white MacBook now.
It's only available to education and only at a special price, so.
Right. So do you think we're thinking that possibly they might do the same thing for the iPad for schools?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there was lots of rumors of when the announcement was made for the textbooks. There was lots of rumors about the so-called e-pad, wasn't there? So I wouldn't be surprised to see a cut-down version, not in size, like you say, but if you're only putting it out there to be essentially textbooks and web stuff and not necessarily for the multimedia stuff in like games. I mean, you need multimedia for video and whatever else, but nothing terribly complicated. You can get away with current gen tech and you don't need to have the latest and greatest everything. You don't need to have a huge amount of storage if it's all cloud-based. So the entry-level model of last year's model is going to be fine for that for a considerable period of time.
I mean, the key thing that struck me about this that kind of made me just think, well, there may be a little bit more to it, is the fact that they're talking about something that's an iReader that's really there to complement the textbook thing. And also there was mention of lower grade processors. This is not a multimedia thing, as Andy's just said there. This is not something for playing Angry Birds on. This is something for reading books on.
Yeah, but why limit what you can do with the device? I mean, that's not Apple's way, is it?
Price.
They want the device to be, multifunction. The current model of iPad, dual core processor, really very, very super fast, super thin.
But if you look at what they did with when they didn't update the Touch, I would see something along those lines that you're not talking something that's deliberately designed as a cut-down device. You're just talking out-of-date tech that can still do some stuff, but is not designed to be, a whiz-bang, up-to-the-minute machine. It's designed to be purely for the price point and do what it does. And it'll still do games, it'll still do this, and it'll still do that, but it doesn't. It's not its prime focus.
I mean, are you saying that, Ewan, because of obviously the Amazon product? I can't even remember what it's called now.
Fire.
Doesn't the sales call or the quarter call that they had earlier this week kind of throw that into an empty bucket, because they, how many iPads did they sell in the quarter, which was above all expectation? If they're going to continue to sell that sort of quantity, I'm not sure that they'd set up a whole new design and production for a smaller device. If the Fire and other devices start creeping into their sales, because I'm not sure the Fire has crept into iPad sales. I think it's just crept into it might even be reader sales. So there's two decisions there, as you said. It's not going to be a deviation from the iPad. It's going to be a completely different product, which is a reader. And I don't think Apple want to get into that market.
I think the only thing that we always come back to on all of the shows that we do, Big included, is the fact that we realise that we are not the stereotypical customer. We don't represent 15 million people. True. We're people that look at it and go, oh, well, that's last year's tech. Who wants that? And the one thing I will say is that I've got a lot of friends and a lot of family who've got an iPad. And the consistent statement that I get back from them, which is another, you know, when you hear any of these kind of rumors, you take what you've heard from the average person and apply them to and go, well, that kind of hits with what they're saying. And to a person, anyone who sits and reads a book with iPad is telling me that it doesn't feel natural, particularly iPad 1. They hate it. They think it's too heavy. And if they've got Kindle to have a look at, they go for Kindle every single time because of the weight and load. And the new iPad is not tremendously heavy. I get that. That's fine. But even people with two are saying it's not that friendly for books. They don't need it that big. They're lying in bed. iPad 2 is way too much. They want something that's smaller. And they gravitate towards Kindle as a result. My wife's read books. Sorry, just take a second. My wife has read books on iPad that I've bought down and given to her and said, you know, you can use it as an ebook reader. She's never got on with it. I bought her a Kindle for Christmas. She is attached to that thing like you wouldn't believe. She says she loves it and she wanted to hate it before she started. That's the thing that kind of chimed with me on this.
But I would say, think about the kind of books you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Are you talking about this algebra textbook where you're looking at a couple pages at a time, looking at some graphs and diagrams? Or are you talking about a book, you know, a novel or something of that sort where you're like reading, you know, 20, 30, 40 pages at a time? It's a different experience.
Yeah, but I'm not saying this device is coming to complement textbooks. I'm saying this device is coming to complement iBooks.
It's a new...
But why would they want to do that? Why would they want a piece of that market? Because, you know, lots of iPad owners that I know have got a Kindle specifically for that reason. Because, you know, again, on the assumption that we're looking at reading proper novels or textual information, you know, the Kindle is and the e-ink technology is far superior to the iPad because you can read it, you know, it's very lightweight. You can read it outdoors. Wow. You can store loads of books.
And Steve Jobs is rolling in his grave based on what you've just said there, Don. If you said, I mean, there's points in the chat room here that are backing up what I'm saying. There are people out there going, yes, I've got an iPad, like my iPad, love it to bits. But if I want to read anything, I read it on a Kindle. Apple are looking at that going, no, we want you to read it on one of our devices. We want you to be in our world. They hate Kindle because Kindle takes them outside their envelope. It takes them outside their control. They want the control of the product. They want the revenue from the product. And every time someone says, I want to play Angry Birds on my iPad, toss it to one side and pick up my Kindle instead, that is a dagger to the heart of the Apple structure because they do not want that. They want people to go, no, I want me mini iPad. I want me experience in iBooks to be in iPad. And most people iBooks experience is... they hate it.
But that's why I think the Retina display is coming.
Absolutely.
iPad 3 is going to have a Retina display, and I think that will, for a lot of people, not everyone, still not going to address
that. Isn't going to change the weight or the size of it, and people putting it down because they don't like the weight and they don't like the size, mate. Well, that's my thought.
How you're reading as well, not just what you're reading, but where you're reading. If you're going to take it around with you, I mean, a Kindle fits in a jacket pocket. An iPad has to go into a bag unless you've got a huge purse. It's a lump that you have to carry with you. You've got issues of where you can read it, things like direct sunlight and all the rest of it that we talk about all the time. It's not so much just what you read. It's how you read and where you read. And, you know, like I've said before in the show, when I got my iPad 2, I almost entirely stopped reading on my Kindle. I prefer the experience of reading on the Kindle. It's a lot lighter, it's easier, it's much easier to read, but I've got the iPad with me and I'm not going to carry two devices. And for the people who don't want to carry two devices and, you know, are looking at things like the Fire, if your decision is you want to just read, you know, text, your standards, you know, fiction, biographies, whatever it is you want to read, an e-ink reader is the best option.
Yeah.
If you need access to the web, you want to check your email, you want to do a little light browsing, then you're thinking about a tablet. A Fire is an attractive halfway point to a lot of people. If the resolution is good enough, I could see a possibility of a 7-inch iPad or iReader or whatever they might call it. But it needs to have those key things. It needs to be thin. It needs to be light. And it needs to have an ultra-high resolution screen. Doesn't necessarily have to have e-ink, is that takes away the other things you might use it for. And I can't see them going to e-ink. They would have done it by now if they were going to do it.
Kyle's in the chat room, and Kyle's the source of this rumour. And he's saying, don't forget that a few months ago, when we were talking about iPad 3 being full retina display, he said near retina display, and he did say that. He said this was not going to come out at full retina, and the reason that they've gone for 7 is because they can do full retina for the ease and clarity of reading. And there's people in the chat room saying they love their Kindle over the reading experience on iPad 2 or iPad 1. That's what made me think there was some credibility to this.
I think it's possible. I think it's one of those things where it's not an impossible thing. There's a lot of reasons they would do it. They're going for iBooks. They haven't had particularly strong sales. They're pretty good, but they're nowhere near on the level of Kindle sales for your standard books.
Not even close.
It's nowhere close either. And cost-wise, if you do a comparison, I was surprised to find such differences in cost for certain books on iBooks versus Kindle as well.
I mean, it'd be fair to say that Amazon is killing Apple on book sales. But I mean, I know they're a bookstore, so you would expect that potentially to start with. But that's got to irk.
Well, it's not just about books, is it? You've got, if you do go for a Fire type device, sort of form factor and capabilities, then it's not just books. They'll be thinking about their other catalog, TV shows, movies, and apps. So there is a very strong reason to go that route if they can get a device that actually, it's going to have to be at least equal to a Fire in price, or maybe a little bit more if it does a lot more. Mm. But people don't look at that. People look at price. If you're a consumer, you look at the price. You're not aware of the extra functionality necessarily. You're going for something that does what it says it does on the literature. And you're looking at the price point, and you're comparing, an apple and an orange based on their price point. You're not looking at the absolute tech specs and all the features it has. You've got something in your mind, and then go into a shop, and it does this and it does that, and that's all that they're really aware of. The price sticker is the thing that stands out the most for them.
Alex, you've been really quiet during this. What's your take?
Personally, I absolutely detest reading on an iPad. I think I've made that point clear. I personally think a 7-inch iPad-esque with some sort of colour e-ink would be the way, would be sensible for Apple to go, in my opinion.
Colour e-ink is horrible at the moment. The devices that are out there that actually use it, you're talking, I think the current state of the devices that are available are sort of in the order of 4,000 colours.
I appreciate that possibly it's not, well, possibly no one else has got it yet, but it doesn't mean that Apple haven't cracked it, because they tend to crack things long before
they can have
early
access to something new. But I've seen stuff that's available. I've seen the next-gen stuff that's been touted around in prototype form. And it's multiple compromises. You can get color so far, but then you lose media. And that's why the Fire is what it is. It's that halfway point between books, portability, and sell through on media.
Go ahead, Alex.
Just saying, but we'll probably get onto Apple's financial results very shortly. A lot of their financial results are based on the fact that there's very little that half the people on this planet do anymore that Apple don't get a cut of somehow, whether it's buying a song, renting a video, it doesn't matter what it is, Apple get a cut. Now, I think the iBooks and all the rest of it is purely because they are not getting their world domination cut, if you like, of books.
Mm.
Now, they are not going to get that world domination cut of books if you have to read them on an iPad. For one, the iPad is too expensive, and two, as far as I'm concerned, it's one of the most unpleasant things I've ever done is try to read a magazine on an iPad. So for them to achieve what they want to achieve, and I believe is putting an iOS, which is the point, which is most important, an iOS device, so you're in the Apple world at all points. You can buy it on your phone, you can read it on your iPad, but more importantly, there's a third device that you can easily read it on cheaply in a school. even if they have to subsidize it massively, that is the one thing they need to basically dominate the world and beat Amazon at the buying books game. So they need something that's cheaper, smaller, as I think it was Andy said, it's too big, the iPad, to walk around with.
Yeah.
And if you've got to spend hours and hours reading, I personally can't do it. And I don't know what studies have been done, and I wouldn't like to say, but I know personally that after a half an hour or something, I get a headache and it's horrible.
It's the only thing that makes me think this is credible, Alex, is the fact that there is no domination for Apple in this area, and I bet it really pisses them off that they are not a credible force in the book market.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that the Kindle it's not the financial problem of Amazon selling X amount of Kindles. It's the fact that people are buying books and they're not buying them to read on Apple devices. And let's face it, I mean, as much as this is a Mac show, it kills Apple if any other company is successful in a field that they feel that they want to be successful in. And let's face it, they've managed to beat everyone at every other game, and this is the next game in the market. But to do that, they need a device that not only is cheap enough, but is actually usable enough.
Anyone else?
Oh, I just keep hearing the word domination all the time. I mean, where's this suddenly come from? If you go back 3 or 4 years, where was the domination with Apple? This is all about people thinking there can only be one device and that there's not room for anybody else. I mean, that's been proven wrong with smartphones for sure, and it'll be proved wrong when it comes to tablet devices as well. Apple. I think you're wrong, Alex. I don't think they're worried about domination. What they want is a profit margin. They are absolutely the supremos at making sure they make a lot of money. And that's what they want at the top level. That's all they're concerned about.
No, I agree.
They're not worried about dominating the whole world. What they will be doing as an organization, and they seem to do it at the moment better than just about any other organization on the planet, and that is making a good profit.
No, I agree, but to make a good profit, you need to have the DRM or you need to have the compatibility for these books. You're not going to buy a book. I mean, I don't know exactly how it works, but the whole point is if Apple have a device mainly aimed at ebook reading, they will DRM it. It will come in iTunes and it will be the Apple version. That somehow, or you'll have a third device that will then have to have an app which somewhere Apple will make a subsidy off of. I don't think it's an altruistic thing. I don't think they want to dominate so the whole world just uses Apple. I think it is. It's that financial game. If 95, I don't know what percentage of music is bought on iTunes, but whatever that percentage is, if they could then get whatever that percentage of ebooks, textbooks, newspapers, magazines, if they could get that percentage on their Apple Reader, which would of course be, because it's iOS, it would be compatible with your iPhone and your iPad and all the rest of it. But the iPhone and the iPad is not a comfortable way for me to read any of these things for any length of time. And if you're going to put them into a schoolroom, it's about the only place, if you mess that up in any way, you know, if it does hurt people's eyes or do any damage whatsoever, there, $100 billion isn't enough to get Apple out of that sort of trouble. You know, because a class action, you know, you finished overnight. So they've got to do something where it is absolutely safe and comfortable to do so. And they do not have a product that is compatible with that at the moment.
Anyone else before we finish on this one? No. There we go. Jolly good. What do you do with $97 billion sat in the bank then, eh? Do you give your investors anything back in dividends? Because there's no word that they're going to.
Pay your tax bill.
Well, most of it's offshore as well, don't forget. So there's a huge amount that's going to get lost. 50% of that's going to disappear as soon as it comes back onshore. But if you're an Apple investor, you've got to be pretty pissed off because you haven't had a dividend for a very long time.
Yeah, it's a very odd. I mean, the only way to make money that way is actually to just to buy, hold onto the shares and then sell them. It's a very, very odd structure that they're not paying dividends on that money.
Don?
So yeah, I can't comprehend that sort of amount of money anyway. And then I just, you know, they've obviously got plans, but what those plans are, they're privy to themselves. And, I couldn't really second guess what they're going to do with that. I know that when Steve was there, he was very much against giving dividends out. It might be different now that Tim Cook's there. You never know. But you know, they're protected from pretty much anything at the moment with that sort of cash reserve.
Yeah.
But what they do with it in the future, goodness only knows.
Is there not a stock market rule, though, that maybe, you know, if you invest in shares, is it just a case of you expect dividend back, or is there any legal requirement for them to make sure that they give you dividend back?
I don't think so.
No, it's optional as far as I know. I mean, practices they usually do. That's part of the point of purchasing a share, but there's nothing that says you have to give any particular amount or ratio, so zero is a perfectly acceptable amount.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what the share is set up. I mean, it's a very, very long time since I did my accountancy stuff, but there are different types of shares which, when they're set up, they produce different types of annuities, and one of them is you get absolutely nothing other than the value of the share can increase, and then you go and flog it. And that's the only point in having that share. It's an investment.
I just wonder whether they're holding on to money for something that they don't know about yet. And that sounds a bit odd, but Steve Jobs was frustrated, I think, back in the day when the Mac came out, because it wasn't making any money. And you've got to be able to make money and have money to be able to move forward. So perhaps, you know, there's an ethos there that just says, you know, we're waiting for the next big thing, which we don't know what it is, but we're going to have the money there available to us so that we can move forward and run with it.
We can dominate that technology. We can buy that technology up.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm still holding out for my belief, and it was a joke originally, but it is a true belief that most of what Apple do these days is based on a system of other people providing the infrastructure, the broadband, the internet, the wireless, and all this rest of it. £100 billion is a very, very, very good start to do a worldwide Apple-structured internet, be it satellite, be it fiber optic, but a completely internal Apple cell system, data system, and everything. So when you buy an Apple device, you use the Apple network, not a third party, not a broadband by anyone else, not a Wi-Fi by anyone else. Yeah, 5G, whatever it is. But can you imagine if you've got X amount percentage of the devices in this world and they're all only running on your network? That's an amazing prospect for one company to structure, and they've got the money to build it.
That really is huge, but the one thing you would say is that there's not a lot of cell networks that are making huge amounts of money without carrying severe long-term debt. If you look at AT&T, I mean, the iPhone 2, if you like, or iPhone 1 when it hit them, was not a good thing for them at all. They've run up $70 billion worth of long-term debt, and they're only making a profit of around $80 billion a year.
Yeah, but my point is why are they making the debt? Because they're having to run the infrastructure on behalf of, at the time, it was the iPhone that came out that absolutely...
Yeah, but Apple aren't going to buy an instant infrastructure, are they?
No, they're going to build one.
But with $97 billion, they're going to start all over again.
Well, you could do it by satellite. You could do it by, WiMAX or something. I mean, there's a new generation of WiMAX, which if you integrated into your own technology, you could have the, 100 megabits quite easily on a mobile device.
So, you know, Chris, what do you think? Applecom?
I'm going to dignify that with an answer.
You don't think? No Apple network?
No.
No.
It hasn't even got up yet.
No, too big.
I think it's just...
The money doesn't go very far. $100 billion is a nice chunk of change, but once you start getting into cell phone game and networking infrastructure, that's not a lot of money at all.
I think it's a lot of money to spend, definitely. Huge amount. We'll see. Fair enough.
They're building a new house.
Allegedly. Still not started yet, though, have they?
I want to see when it takes off.
Start spinning.
Did anyone try Eevee?
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Eevee? You've not tried Eevee yet. Eevee is supposedly the answer to Siri.
Oh, Siri, yeah.
And I've got to say, We've had a play this afternoon, and it has at least started replying today, which it didn't do before. But in terms of quality of answer, it's patchy, I would say. Not very good at all. I did put into it a Thai restaurant near Heathrow when I was working down there on Monday. And by the time I opened the phone this morning, the little eye was still going backwards and forwards. It was still thinking about it. It hadn't got a clue. Couldn't get to its servers. Didn't understand questions. Is Siri got to be worried? Is this worth having, or has anyone else played with it?
Yeah.
No?
I think it's good fun. But the thing is, what you're forgetting is Android as well. So this is a marketplace that even if they can get it working a little bit, it's the only option for people that don't own iPhone 4Ss, including everyone on Android, including everyone on any Apple device that isn't a 4S. And I had loads of fun, and for 69p... the fact that it worked once was enough. It was good fun. They will get it to work, and then Apple are up their game, and then it'll just, you know, it's all part of the fun and joy of it all. But I imagine we're talking infrastructure. I imagine their servers would be getting a hammering far beyond what they expected. So it might take a while for them to get up and running properly, but I think it's great fun.
What kind of bothers me is if you say to Siri, "Do I need an umbrella today?" It tells you yes or no, or it reads out what the weather's like in your local area. If you ask Evie, even if it's working, it comes back and says, you may want to go here and get weather information. It sends you to the BBC or to AccuWeather, which I don't want it to tell me where to go. I want it to give me an answer. That's the key point.
It's just come out, though, hasn't it? I mean, I think they're probably running it on the lowest possible setting at the moment, because as soon as they turn it up, the whole thing crashes. So, I mean, I love it. I love anyone that's having a go, and at least they're having a try.
They should have a sarcastic mode. You know, anything with the word weather in it, look out the window, you fool.
No, never mind.
Why are you asking me? I'm a phone.
Galaxy Tab is okay for sale in Holland. Apparently, they've lost their Apple have lost their bid to get it stopped for sale. Is that mission accomplished for Apple? Because I mean, I think it was just a case of slowing it down to the point that it was old tech before it became readily available.
I think yes to a certain degree, but. I mean, Apple's not letting up on this stuff. I mean, they're filing more lawsuits in Germany. I think Samsung is trying to challenge Apple's design certifications they have in Europe. So they're fighting against that. I think they're trying to they're going to push this as far as they can push it, because they don't want everybody to just copy them. They don't want that. If everybody can just copy Apple, then why does Apple bother doing what they do? Part of the reason why they do what they do is because they make something very unique, very Apple-like. I think they're definitely going to push to have a court decision made. This is how far you can go.
I mean, if you're making something, though, you know, even with 100 billion, that 100 billion is not going to go very far if you pick a fight with every single person that makes any tech that's even close to yours.
Yeah, but there's not many worth bothering with. I mean, Samsung's one of the few worth bothering with. They're not going to stop every single factory in China that's pumping out knockoffs. That's not going to,
Yeah, but I mean, they've got the cash reserves to do what they want.
They've even made certain advances in that, trying to stop just the plain old knockoffs. They've gotten the Chinese government involved in that too. So,
palms are being greased.
Yes.
To try and stop stuff. So it won't go that far. Have we got any cool thingies? Don, have you got a cool thing for us?
Well, I've got one here. With being a speaker at Macworld, you get a swag bag. So I've been rummaging through my swag bag, and I found this and thought of you, Ewan. This is this is an iPod case, or an iPhone case, but it has a bottle opener attached to it.
What on earth made you think of me?
Well, you like the occasional beer now and again, so I thought that'd be a nice little thing. It's an opener. So it's over at openacase.com. But it's a nice little gadget. You can stick it on your iPhone, carry it around, and then just open a quick bottle. There you go. And my cool thingy.
And you got that free.
Yeah, it was in my swag bag. So I don't know how much it is, but they have got a booth on the show floor. I don't think it's...
yeah, I saw that on Engadget this morning.
Is that an eye-opener then? Boom, boom.
Oh. Thank you. Andy, have you got one for us?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, well.
You were late as well.
I was late and I'm...
Late, like, didn't bring anything.
Yeah, sorry.
What you like. Chris, what have you got for us, mate?
Here's something that I guess I should say it's really cool. I saw on the show floor. It's a new, so you're familiar with AirPrint.
Yeah.
And it's this, you know, if printer companies support AirPrint in their printer and it's wireless, then you can use your iPhone or your iPad and just connect to it on the network. Just hit print, hit the printer. It just prints it out. HP has a new feature in some of their newest Wi-Fi enabled printers that they call Wireless Direct. And what it does is the Wi-Fi module in the printer will actually advertise its own SSID. And without even having to join the network or knowing the password or anything, you just simply select the printer from the available Wi-Fi options. You know, in the settings on the iPhone or whatever, it shows you all the available networks. You just select the printer name, and it'll join a special network just between you and the printer, and you can AirPrint to your heart's content.
Very good.
I thought it was extremely clever.
It is. No, very good.
Say something about that. Not about that. The other day,
not if you're going to start a fight, Foxy.
No, nothing at all like that at all. The other day, my dad brought around one of those new little Polaroid wireless little printer things. And for the love of, I just could not get the thing to do what it was supposed to do. I couldn't connect it to my phone, the Mac, or anything. But I could get the Bluetooth to connect, but there was no way I could get a print function to work. But I found that all I had to do is drop an image, which is what I wanted to print, onto the, you know, when you can just send a file to a Bluetooth connection.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, I found all I had to do is send the file to the Bluetooth connection and the printer did the rest. So even though it's not specifically compatible because there's no print, there's no drivers, there's no this, that or the other, it still worked by literally just sending an image to it. So I don't know about all the other Bluetooth printers in the world, but it might be worth having a look and seeing if you can get it to function that way. It was just a by the by when you mentioned it.
Cool.
There you go.
Thanks, mate.
Sorry to boy.
Who's next? Gas, what have you got for us, mate?
Well, I haven't really got any cool stuff, but I thought I'd do a Will Green on you.
Ghost Hunter.
No. A few of my colleagues over at the MyMac, it's the Stoplight Network where we've got a few podcasts running. A few of them have been playing Run Kitty Run. It's the Adventures of Timmy. It sounds really lame, and I don't know why I thought of Will when I came up with this. But it's a little game. Actually, there's a free version and a charged version, and it's basically a little platform game, and it's incredibly addictive. Actually, so you just go over and take a look. It's a platform game with a little kitty, and he's got to run, and he gets attacked by rabbits. It'll make you laugh.
No trade descriptions problems then.
No. It made me laugh. And it is quite addictive. So, but it's a free version. It's really for the iPhone, but I've doubled it up on the iPad and it looks okay.
Jolly good. Excellent, mate. Thank you. And Alex, what have you got for us?
Okay. Well, I did have one thing, but I'm going to allow you to do it, Ewan.
No, I'm not doing that. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to do that either.
Oh, okay. Right? We're going to do Glimpse again.
Yes.
Well, not again.
Well, no, but Carl's supposed to have used it today and told us, and he can't get it to work, so that's why we're not picking it. Otherwise, we'd have picked it for a third week straight.
Yeah, but now we can't because he's broken it. Right, it's very simple. It's something, again, I did mention to Ewan earlier. This morning, I took delivery of a couple of... I don't know if you use Wi-Fi dongles in anywhere, but I always have real trouble because they're great when you're close, but they're pretty damn useless as soon as you go anywhere within a range that it doesn't like, and that's not too far away. And I bought some quite cheap. They're from the Alpha Network, and they have got, like, great long codes, and I bought them on Amazon, and they're just... Alpha, A-L-F-A network. And they're not dongles. They're little boxes, which are USB boxes. And they work in the same way as a dongle. But you can bolt on an external area on it. The ones I bought came as a package with a 7 decibel indoor antenna, and I actually bought a 9 decibel one, and they come as a 5. But at the end of my garden, I was having real trouble in my shed getting anything like good enough Wi-Fi reception. I was getting about 12% on wireless end. I put this on, you know, the software that came with it, and I'm getting 100% quality and 100% signal strength down the end of the garden, and I'm getting 100% wireless end where I was getting 12% with a dongle. And I think this cost me about £20. I don't particularly want to go any further, but 100% there, that's probably 150 feet away. I have no idea how far I could go, but it's, you know, it's USB powered. It comes with a suction cup if you want to stick it onto, actually stick it onto the lid of your laptop. But
glad you finished that sentence.
Yes. It's improved my Wi-Fi range, I don't know, exponentially. So there's loads of different versions. That's why I'm not giving you a particular make and not a particular number, but there's Alpha, A-L-F-A, Alpha Network, and they're just called long-range USB adapters, but the one I've Very got good. Is absolutely fantastic.
The neighbour's microwave has just blown up, but at least you've got good Wi-Fi.
The dogs have all started howling in the neighbourhood.
Yeah, make sure you... And I'll tell you something else. I found out today that because I used various different whatever you call it, encryption on them. But if you really want the full distance, you really need to use, I think it's 2SK or whatever, the top of the range one, whatever that's called, anyway, the top of the range one, you get the option to, and put it on AES and not TKIP or whatever, and you'll get full strength. Any of the others actually reduce it substantially.
Right, good pick, mate.
There you go.
My pick... This is going to really wind you all up, I reckon. In another life, I used to do something with whole body vibration through ergonomics.
Really?
Yeah. And I was at a workplace this week, and I'm talking to one of the guys, and he was saying, we've got problems with vibration on the platform. I said, well, you know, you can get someone in to measure that. And he said, well, I just want to know if we've got a problem first or not. I said, I reckon I could tell you if you've got a problem or not. I went and stood on it, and I thought they had a bit of a problem. And I went to the App Store and I downloaded an application called Vibration. There you go. There's the logo for it. And Vibration is uses the accelerometer to measure the positive and negative vibration on solid surfaces that you hold the iPhone against. And there you go. There's the application. And it works. And it's really, really good. And I put this thing on. And I thought before I started, he might have a bit of a problem. And as soon as I'd finished getting some readings off it, I said, yep, you're over 2.8 meters per second squared. So you may need to get someone in to have a good proper look at that. And he said, thanks very much, mate. There you go. It works. It's £2.99, so it's not cheap. But vibration, if you're into whole body vibration or hand arm vibration, you can get your iPhone to clamp against and just see if you... got a problem or not?
I think that goes to show just how good the technology inside that phone is.
I've got the other one I've got is the inclinometer one, where you get degrees and angles. You can lean it against something to find out what the angle something is, and that's brilliant as well as absolutely superb.
And so it got a seismograph built in.
I knew I'd get a kicking for that. Chat room hasn't started yet, but they will.
Oh, by the way, it's called WPA2 Personal, which is what I was trying to recommend. AES, not TKIP.
Whole body vibration is a very serious problem, my friend. Don't make fun of it.
I'm sure it is if you're epileptic.
Yeah, mate, I thought of a pick for you.
Oh, Andy's got one now. He's come in. Yeah. Last word. Go on, then.
Yeah. Well, iTunes U, the app, the new app. I'm liking it because it adds a feature that's missing from the iTunes, in that you can subscribe to what do I call them, podcasts, but in iTunes U. But the thing the iTunes app adds on your iPad or your iPhone is the ability to subscribe and actually get stuff downloaded as it comes in.
Right.
Otherwise, you have to sync. If you use normal iTunes, you've got to either sync it on your Mac or you've got to download it manually. But the iTunes U app lets you actually automatically receive updated content. So that's quite cool.
Good, man. Thank you very much. Excellent. iTunes, I've downloaded the iPhone thing from Stanford, so I'm going to sit and read that in the next, or listen to those in the next few weeks. It's 43 of them, though.
Yeah, they're very, very good.
All right, good. Will I actually be able to program an iPhone by the end of it?
No.
Oh, okay. Waste of time, then. I won't bother. I'm going to start. This podcast and lots of others would not be possible without UK2. We are still indebted to them. Every week we are. But they've got some fantastic new stuff coming off. First thing, little low-level thing, £2.95 a month will get you their site builder. Now, their site builder is a really powerful application that will help you build pretty complicated sites, it has to be said. You can do paywalls with it and things like that. It's dead easy to use. It looks very, very impressive. They've got a ton of templates for you to choose from. You can drag and drop your own content into it. Go and check that out. As I say, £2.95 a month will get you that, and it really is worth having. They've also got full integration now on their web hosting packages, so it lets you add your website directly into Facebook and gives you the code to link it all straight through and get your likes all listed and all that kind of thing. But the best thing of all that they've got at the moment is a big offer on dedicated servers. If you want a dedicated server, you can get one from £49 a month, which is pretty cheap for the service. If you go up to £249 a month, if you've got high-end stuff where you've got a lot of data transfer, you can get 100 terabytes a month of bandwidth, 1 terabyte server, extremely fast processors on them, and you'll be very, very happy with it. And here's the real best bit of all. Our offer code works with it. So instead of paying £249 a month, you're going to spend £45 a month less than that on your service. It's a really good chance. Get yourself down to bageltechnews.com, use the click through, and go straight through to uk2.net. They'll know we sent you. Use the offer code BAGELTECH to get 15% off, and BAGELDNS if you're transferring your hosting service in, and you won't pay a DNS management charge, which is £20 on its own. So you'll make a massive saving. Please support them as well, because they really support us too. So uk2.net, we're lost without them. And Chris has disappeared, obviously. He's gone back to sleep. Never mind. Quick, who you are and where we can get you. Don, where can we get you, mate?
Yeah, you can always find me over at screencastonline.com and also on my blog, which I hope to resurrect when I get back to the UK, at themaxscreencastguy.com. Excellent. And also on Twitter as Don McAllister.
And you've got a couple of lessons come out today, haven't you? A couple of videos. One on...
Yeah, I did one on QuickTime. The session I gave at Macworld was all about QuickTime, so I've actually sort of done a screencast. It's not a recording of the session. It's a completely... brand new screencast that I've done all about QuickTime. So that's out today. And also Sketch for iPad, which is the new iOS tutorial I do each week now. I think that was a 20-minute screencast all about Sketch for iPad.
Excellent. Good man. Andy, where can we get you?
Well, I'm at Longball on Twitter, also via the London Mac user group at lmug.org.uk.
And drinking on Tuesday night round London town.
Not this Tuesday. The pub crawls the Tuesday after, but we'll be out and about anyway.
Oh, you'll be drinking anyway.
I'll be around Tuesday night. We'll have a beer, mate, then.
Yeah, come.
Definitely. Gaz, where can we get you, mate?
Nice and easy, gazmaz.com. Lots of links.
Good man. Alex?
Alex G. Fox at Twitter.
And you can get Chris Forsman at Ars Technica, where you can look at all his writing, and you can get him also on Twitter at Forsmac, and he's lost his internet connection in the hotel, so... He's just tweeted. Awfully sorry. We'll be back again next week with another roundup as normal. Full house planned again. And we'll be talking some news from Macworld. Hopefully there'll be a ton of gadgets to come out with over the next couple of days that will be worth talking about. And hopefully no one will hate each other at the end, because we've all been arguing over a rumour. See you next week.